The abundance of the ocean has sustained humankind from the beginning, but only in our recent history have we learned to treat its bounty as finite and act accordingly. Stephen Pallenby is a professor of biological sciences at Stanford University and the co-author of a study that warns against any loss of federal protections for marine sanctuaries. The heart of the problem, as he told us the other day, is that we continue to take more from the ocean than we give back.
The protected areas in the ocean have been growing in number and size, but it's still really a pretty small percentage. Maybe about 2% of the ocean is protected right now. And they have proven to be our best tool for allowing ocean areas to come back to life. It's maybe not a big surprise when you stop fishing and damaging and destroying areas of the ocean. It allows the fish and invertebrates and everything in them to bounce back. So since we need the ocean to be really productive for us to be able to use it for food and recreation, what we found is that giving it a little chance to recover has been an enormously powerful tool. So that's the main thing. We have a tool. We know how to use it. It's not a very expensive to use tool. And so the marine protected areas around the world are our way to do that.
Is the protection that currently exists adequate?
Well, the protection that exists right now is, say, around Papahanaumokuakea is adequate for the place that it is. But what we have been discovering over the last 5 or 10 years is that a lot of the really important species, say, in a coral reef environment, are the large predators, the sharks in particular, and they have pretty big home ranges. And if you want to protect them, if you want to protect their populations, then you have to protect pretty wide areas. So, no, when it comes to those species, the current areas are simply not big enough in order to protect them.
One of the things that you also hear about is that the methods of fishing in areas, in the areas where it's permitted, can be very destructive, even beyond what the fisher folk are trying to extract from the ocean.
You know, that's true. I think a lot of people have gone fishing. I certainly have, and you can't predict exactly what you're going to pull out of the ocean when you go fishing. And as much as fishermen really want to catch what it is they're out there licensed to catch because it's more efficient and profitable for them to do so, they can't do it perfectly. And so when they pull up a species that they're not licensed to catch or that they can't sell, that's called bycatch.
Yeah.
But it is a destruction of species that we would really, in many cases, prefer to protect. So in many cases, the fishermen are the people caught in the middle, up between the need to protect things and then an inability to fish perfectly. And so in some senses, just leaving areas of the ocean alone gets them off the hook, if you don't mind the pun, and allows them to fish other places and not worry so much, and then leaves the protection in place for places that we know are really critical.
Some fishing methods have been compared to logging by just cutting down everything in the forest in order to get at the trees you want.
That's right, and that's the problem in trying to fish. Say you're using long lines that you lay out and then you cruise away and come back in 4 hours or a few days. Well, those hooks are out there catching whatever comes by, and then you sort among those dead fish for the ones that you have license to catch. So that would be like just cutting down the trees indiscriminately and then going back and discovering the ones that you are actually had a permit to take. Nobody wants to do that. That is how fishing has had to happen for a long time. So just recognizing that there's hardly anything you can do to make fishing perfect, these area closures are a way to have the protections in place and then just really recognize that fishermen have got to go about their business in an imperfect world.
Well, the imperfection that you're describing, it sounds to me as if the future balance between fishing and marine protection doesn't seem very sustainable the way it is now, or does it?
The way fishing has been going for the last couple of decades hasn't been very sustainable. And as fishing has gotten heavier and heavier, and we've been able to fish deeper and deeper, places of the ocean now are fished commercially that were so off limits before just because they were so far away.
Mm-hmm.
And every time we take more out of the ocean than the ocean can actually generate, then the whole ecosystem begins to degenerate. But we do know that ocean species are some of the most productive ones on Earth. I mean, fish can have hundreds of thousands or millions of eggs at a time. They grow quickly. The populations, when we protect them, can bounce back. So by knowing that and by establishing some areas that are protected, then we have a better chance of being able to fish sustainably in places that that are allowed for fishing.
Can you envision a balance of marine protections and fishing that is sustainable? You know, if you really had your way and were sort of given authority to reconfigure this, is there a way you could envision reconfiguring that balance that would work for everyone?
You know, I think there is, and people have done this in a small set of cases, and in small local areas, especially in reef areas. There are villages in the Philippines even, which has tremendously powerful overfishing, so much so that a fish the size of your thumb would be considered to be a great catch. Yep. Even in those areas, villages have put aside some part of their reef, not a lot of it, but some of it, and have generated enough protection for the fish in those areas to grow a lot bigger than they would otherwise. Their fishing has increased. Their tourism has increased because divers come now and they go diving in the Philippines. And that dual source of income, fishing and tourism, is what has allowed these villages to actually thrive when places around them, other villages, have been in decline. So yes, I can envision these working in lots of different places. There's lots of examples of it. And I think what has to happen in any particular case is the locals there who know how to use the ocean and generally want to do it in a sustainable way need to have the support to set those things up so that they're not economically disadvantaged in the short term. If we can get through the first 5 or 10 years of these things, then they tend to pay off. They tend to pay for themselves. But helping people get through those initial protections has been really, really important around the world.
It sounds as if education would play a strong part in making that come about.
It is, really. It's totally right, Chris. Education, but also word of mouth, because, you know, scientists like me all over the world have been saying how important marine protected areas are for decades now. And what really matters is when a fisherman stands up and says, you know, my fishing's a lot better since we protected that area over there. And those are the kinds of things that tend to work better. And when scientists and fishermen get together and agree, okay, this is working, let's promote it, let's tell other people, then you see these things happening. You see it in Hawaii with marine protected areas around the coast being the places where you can go and see big reef fish if you're snorkeling, or you can go and see people fishing near the boundaries of those marine protected areas because they know that's where they're going to catch the most fish.
Are you optimistic, Steve?
You know, Chris, I tend to be optimistic, and I tend to be really optimistic when I get in the water and I see that there's still a lot of life in there, that incredible bounty of fish and in some cases coral. Other times you get in the water and you see nothing but destruction and death and problems. At the end of the game, the ocean can heal itself, because it is so productive. And as long as we can keep an eye on that and keep moving towards it, I do feel pretty optimistic. What does crash into my optimism is climate change, because that's not something that a local town or even a state can solve. And I think we all have to sort of face that in the future and say our job is to really admit climate change is a big problem, work to solve that by dropping emissions wherever we can, and then saving as much as we can of the oceans until things begin to get better.
So hope is better than no hope, right?
I think hope, you know, practical hope where you say, you know, this is a big problem and I don't want to just like pretend it isn't there, but here's some things we can do about it. But we have to find the ways forward in all of these things. And that means listening to one another. As much as sort of explaining what can be done, listening to what different people have to say and different people think. And when that happens, I think you can have some good consequences. If I just sat here at my desk and looked and read papers and read reports and looked at data sets all the time, I'd probably be pretty pessimistic. But it's the chance of getting in the ocean and seeing what's really there that brings back my my awe of what's there and my joy in it and renews my sense that this is really a good fight.
Stephen Pallenby is a professor of biological sciences at Stanford University and the director of Stanford Hopkins Marine Station, the author of The Evolution Explosion, How Humans Cause Rapid Evolutionary Change. You can find a link to his work on today's edition of the Conversation podcast at hawaiipublicradio.org.